Nice to see you all today. My name is Tom Wilkinson. I'm, as he said, online media producer for Oxford University, which means I'm in charge of a large proportion of all the video that goes up on Oxford University's site. And one of the reasons that I think I might have been invited to come and speak to you today is because Oxford University has had a couple of successes with web video. We found it to be really, really useful in doing some of the things that we want to do. And before I go on to talk about the main subject of my speech, making rowing sexy, apologies to any rowers in the room. I think rowers themselves are sexy, but the sport of rowing maybe has a little distance to go there. Before I come into the main topic of my speech, I'd like to talk to you about some of the successes we've had on web video, including one that we... Yay! Including one that actually TalkSpot itself has happened with. So let me give you a bit of background to some of the problems that Oxford was facing that web video could help to solve. I don't know if you know, but about half of the students at Oxford come from an independent school background. They come from private schools of some kind. And private schools only educate about a tenth, less than a tenth, of all the A-level students in the UK. So somewhere along the line, some of those students aren't applying. And we thought initially that it might be some problem at interview, that maybe they weren't very good in interviews. We thought maybe that there was some prejudice against them in interviews, and there's been a lot of research about that. And it turns out that they do, state school kids do exactly as well as independent school kids in interviews, but the problem was that they weren't applying. And they weren't applying, as far as we could tell, because they didn't think Oxford was for them. And we did loads and loads and loads of access events, but we found a couple of years ago that we were kind of being outgunned, that we would do like 1,000 access events in schools, and then EastEnders would create an Oxford character, and the Oxford character would be very posh, and that would kind of wipe that out. So, with a company called Angel Shot Media, and a little bit of help from a company called Torchbox, we produced this, which is the Wall of 100 Faces. And it's just a video wall of 100 students talking about their lives, really mundane stuff. Like there's a student there from Northern Ireland who's talking about the bread that he misses from home. There's someone, there's an Aussie complaining about rain, inevitably, stuff like that. Very, very, very mundane stuff. And the idea is to show the diversity of students at Oxford rather than actually telling people. Because I think if you have someone there on video who's Northern, explaining that they're Northern, maybe that's a bit heavy-handed. So instead you have them talking about something else, you have them complaining about something. And what that actually does is just subtly let people know there are people like that at Oxford. Obviously there are thousands. And you know, that there are people like them and they should come and they should apply. And we found that video was very good at introducing subtle messages to people. That whereas in a talk you have to say things and you know, be very, very explicit about them. But in a video, a web video, sometimes you find that the things around the edge of the frame, behind the person talking, are as interesting as the things that the person is saying themselves. So for instance, that their rooms are messy. Or, and this is a genuine thing, that they're just, you know, in their own clothes, because you watch a lot of episodes of Lewis, you might see that people walk around in gowns all the time, which they don't at the university. So honestly, stuff like that was really, really helpful. Showing rather than telling diversity. And, you know, there are posh people on the wall, and there are people on the wall complaining, sometimes in quite vociferous terms, about the university. And that just adds to this kind of impression of honesty, that we're showing exactly what the university is like in a way that, you know, talks to people wouldn't necessarily do. And it really helped, I think, and this is worth bearing in mind, and I'll come back to this, that the videos themselves are very short. Each one is like 1 to 2 minutes long. And the interesting thing was that that doesn't then mean that people just watch 1 or 2 minutes of video. In fact, quite a lot of people watch 1 hour and 40 minutes of video. They watch all 100. But because they have that power, they can click from one to the other to the other to the other. They feel in control. They're much happier. We've kind of attuned that message to the kind of the shallows generation of the internet. We can get people watching for a lot longer just so long as they're clicking a lot and they feel that they can change the subject a lot. We thought that play all button was like an I'm feeling lucky on Google, but it actually turns out that that's the button that people genuinely use. But giving them the option is really, really important. So that was really helpful in getting to a new audience of people. And the year after it was launched, applications from state schools to Oxford rose by 17%. 17. But nevertheless, an enormous amount. And if you look at Cambridge the same year, which is kind of a similar sort of university that does many of the same sorts of things, they only managed a single figure growth. Obviously, that's just an anecdote, but it's definitely one I'm going to use. So yeah, second up, we also discovered not only is this stuff good at reaching new audiences and speaking to them in a new way, we also found that in some cases it could be substantially cheaper than whatever else you were planning to do. Oxford has to produce, it's mandated to produce an annual report every year, but unlike some sort of fairly, you know, insubstantial company reports or anything like that, it's a big, thick, very, very sort of glossy or very, very matte, but very, very thick, rich paper stock stuff that has to be sent out to 8,000 people each year, who then put it in the recycle bin, who then get rid of it. So what we wanted to do was to try and get that looked at a bit more, to get people to actually pay attention to it. And so what we did, rather than spending the money on the print, we decided to produce a series of videos explaining what the university was doing that year. And if we could turn the sound up a tiny bit. We'll see if this will work. The centerpiece was this hand-drawn animation. That's my hairy hand you're about to see.
It's been a busy year for the university. We've been teaching almost 12,000 undergraduates
to, RSA
and 9,000 postgraduates,
and also
drawn from 130 countries around the world.
Personal lodestar.
And we've just interviewed another 10,000 potential undergraduates about coming next year too. We know that.
So we reach more people with this. We engage more of them, at least judging from the responses that we got from them. And we did so at half the cost of what we would have done with a printed annual review. Congratulatory email that we actually got was from a guy at the BBC, a senior exec in news research at BBC Marketing, saying he really liked the video. And then a fortnight later, BBC News ran a hand-drawn animated guide to the news. And, I drew the obvious conclusion. It's just an anecdote, but it's definitely one I'm going to use. So, you know, all this is to say that we found video really, really useful, and we found it great in reaching new audiences in a new way and actually saving money. But I appreciate that this is probably, so far, sounding a bit like a 2008-09 kind of talk. This is about the use of web video. I mean, it's proved fantastically helpful to all of you, but a lot of people have kind of got this message already. You may not be able to see because it's quite dark on the bedsheet there, but this is my mother. This is my mum. She's awesome, but she's retired. It's been, you know, a while that she's been alive, and... And generally speaking, you know, she might ring me up and say, oh, there's a problem with a computer, and I go and I discover that the problem with a computer or the printer or what have you is that it's not plugged in and not switched on, and, you know, I earn a free meal for offering that kind of IT support. So she's not very IT savvy. And yet, when she goes out and decides to garden or something like that, she goes on YouTube and she finds a video of a plant that needs to be pruned, and she actually watches that plant being pruned on YouTube rather than going to any of the gardening books she has, because it shows her rather than tells her, because it's just a really, you know, incredible resource. So if my mum is kind of clued up onto the importance of web video, maybe I need to talk about something else. And the thing that I wanted to talk about, and it will relate to the rowers in a minute, is the problem of quality. You know, because web video has grown, we're beginning to get more and more people, not just like me who you know, do videography full time, but also maybe I've spoken to some of you here already. You know, you might own a 5D or something, and then you're asked, oh, can you film a little bit of this conference, or can you go out and do this? And, you know, I know occasionally people do video Christmas cards, and they're awesome. So there are people who, you know, as a portion of their job, start doing video. And what tends to be the case with those guys is that they're very much working on their own. And when you're on your own, you know, especially once you've left training and, you know, you're not surrounded by a kind of community, it becomes quite hard to learn because you're not able to bounce ideas off others. You don't have a knowledgeable buddy there that might have a different skill set from you. And obviously you can learn, like my mum, you can go to YouTube and look up, you know, a whole host of tips. You can go on forums and that kind of stuff. But that relies on you knowing that you don't know something. And I think what's often the case with video is that there are many, many areas in which you could improve, but you don't know that you could improve, because standards are evolving so quickly in so many different areas. You've got recording of video and audio, you've got editing and post-production facilities, you've got to worry about codecs and compression, you've got to worry about soft skills like interviewing, you've got to worry about the law sometimes in terms of, you know, copyright and permissions in particular places. So there's a lot to take on board, and if you're doing that on your own in a kind of a bit of a vacuum, the risk is that your skills kind of ossify at the point when you stop training or when you started that videography job. And that's not really helped by the quite short turnaround that sometimes characterizes video projects. Like, you can you can do a project and you just have it. You're like a photographer. You turn up, you do a bit of video, and you immediately leave again. So it's very, very difficult to get the necessary quality. Now, it's said that the tools of video are now as accessible as paper and pencils, which is true. Very expensive pencils, but I think it's true that there's a lot of that they are very accessible. So if we take web videos dating from about February 2005, so that's when YouTube was launched, and we think that's 7 years this month ending. This is what a 7-year-old can produce with paper and pencils. And I think this probably characterizes the state of a lot of corporate video at the moment because of the problems I've identified. So how do we deal with this? So let me come to these rowers now. At the middle of last year, we got an awesome gig to follow the boat race, beginning from their initial trials all the way up to the race in April, a video each month. And we initially thought, that's a great commission, awesome. And then we began to think about the particular problems with that particular gig. For instance, there's the issue of maintaining quality, because it's actually quite difficult to film good footage of rowing. There's a lot of it out there, recorded by rowers and for rowers, and in lots of cases by rowers for rowers, and in a significant subset of that case, by rowers for the same rowers, you know, uploading their own practices and watching them endlessly on Vimeo and that kind of thing. But it's very hard to get like a good shot of a boat, because it's, you know, it's going quite fast, and it's difficult to get all the setups and that kind of thing. And it's wet, so you risk dropping cameras in lakes, which is bad. Moreover, you have to sustain people's interest over half a year with this project. Every month, we had to find something that would encourage people to keep watching. When rowing training, even if the rowers are getting better at the rowing training, pretty much looked the same. And we had to get an extra 4 hours out of them from their 12-hour workdays. A blues rower for the Oxford-Cambridge boat race that we're following is often someone who might have Olympic experience or international experience, or is going on to have Olympic and international experience. And they're training for 8 hours a day, and then in theory at least, they're working for another 4 hours on top of that. And we wanted to get another 4 hours on top of that to interview them and to get them to do B-roll. And that's a big ask. This is still from the video. I'm running a bit low from time, but let me just, if you could turn up the sound on this, play it as evocative background. And the solution that we found
in sort of trying to attain the top level, you strip everything else away and you leave your main objective, which is rowing.
There is a sort of a particular, I think, British fascination with doing kind of tough, slightly extraordinary physical activities. This would probably extend back to, I don't know, I'm not sort of overstating our case, but you know, whether it's climbing Mount Everest and things like that. The British have always been at the forefront of doing slightly odd and extremely difficult physical challenges. And I think the boat race has some connection to that. It's an extremely tough race physically. It's 3 times the length of the Olympic Games. It's rowed through extraordinary conditions. And the sort of the suffering is extremely visible because it is televised. I think you're able to gain that kind of access to the sort of the more inner experience of the rowers much more than you ever would through many other sporting situations. You know.
There you go. Stop again, a porny close-up if I can. This was the first video we did. The rowers liked it. And it turned out actually, I know I'm a bit short on time, that this iterative approach was actually really helpful. That this episodic, one after the other way of making the videos was incredibly helpful, because what happened was that we could try something in one video, we could test it, we could sort of prototype whatever we were planning to do, and then implement it in the next video. And every month we'd come back. And as we did that, we would gain collaborators, because we'd come back to the rowers who were then, you know, felt like superstars because we were filming them. And they'd actually suggest things to us, and they'd give more and more time to us. For instance, they'd give hours over for us to just get a shot of a couple of seconds of them training in the second video. Or they'd let us into their bedrooms, or they'd let us into their changing rooms. Because they'd seen previous episodes, they knew what we were about. So we had this iterative, constantly testing approach to video. And we had the collaboration of the rowers themselves. And we were collaborating amongst ourselves, because it was, a few of us in the company. I got hired by Oxford halfway through, but we were a little team. And then we got phone calls at the office from the producers of The March of the Penguins saying that they might want to use the footage on Canal Plus on French TV. We got another call from the BBC saying that they wanted it for their boat race coverage, but this time we were wise to the BBC's tricks and insisted on getting an interview with the head of BBC Sport here. That's him in the control van just before the Six Nations talking to us. And one story in particular illustrates this kind of iterative approach. This is a 8-rotor mini camera helicopter. So big, despite the fact it's remote control, that it actually technically counts as a drone. You need a license to fly it. Because we're following a rowing boat, we had to construct, and obviously it moves, we had to construct a mini aircraft carrier to launch it from. We had to get a 60-foot rowing launch. I'm not making this up. A 60-foot rowing launch and put naval ply on top of it and so that we could launch this thing up and down. It was incredibly cold that time of year. This was the last of 6 standby days that we could film on. It's so cold that the batteries would run down really, really quickly, that we all had to be there in ski gear. But we did it, and we did it because the guy at the boathouse was willing to give us that time to construct an aircraft carrier for us. And the rowers were willing not to look up at this thing buzzing next to them. It was just incredible. It wouldn't have happened without this kind of iterative testing process. That we could show them something, tell them what we were going to do, and they trusted us because they could see what we had done already. And those would be the lessons I'd offer. I mean, take an iterative approach to video, step by step. It's always good to have a short video. I've already said that. So if you have a long video, break it into small segments. Do pilots. Do one short video first. Show it to people. Take it back to people. See what they think. And find collaborators. Maybe you can get them because they're the subject of the videos. And maybe you can't because you're just one person, the videographer, on their own in the office. And if you can't do that, let me just come to my final point, a modest proposal. Networking events, especially geek-based, I find, are awesome. However, rightly, and despite these talks, they're often mostly about people. They're mostly about speaking to other people or finding people on stage and discovering what they do. They're sometimes less about stuff. So what I propose, and this is just off the top of my head, is a kind of working pub night. The people bring, upload to a Vimeo site, or they bring USB sticks with videos on them, and it's just a show and tell. That you come to the pub and you meet other people who make video or want to make video or make video one day a month or might make video in future, and you bring what you want to do. So you find collaborators because they come to the pub with you, and you get that kind of step-by-step iterative way of working because you come to the pub regularly with these people. You can go away and try the things that they suggest to each other. You have a buddy that helps build your knowledge and build your skills in web video. And I think that will be awesome. So thank you very much. Take a look, search for Oxford Today if you want to see these videos on the boat race. It's the first link and the first thing on that page. Come and chat if you like. The room is quite crowded. So I've just left my email address up there. And I hope that this is something that might happen in the future. Thank you very much for your time.